standing beside Junior Bush yesterday. That's all you need to remember. Have that picture in your mind. If you're one of these folks deciding, well, I'm not going to vote for Hillary, I'm not going to vote for Obama, whichever way it goes, if your candidate loses, you remember that picture of them standing on that porch yesterday together. And you remember exactly what's going to happen if that man should win the presidency. You might as well just keep Junior Bush in the White House, because that's exactly what we'll be having again. No doubt about it. They'll make sure of it. Thanks so much for joining us here today. Do remember what I said about helping to support the show. We need your support with the show. We really do. Thanks for joining us here on the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. Thanks to Billy Shears, our music director. And thanks to all of you for listening. And don't forget, you heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
From Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Well, this week has been a battle for the heart and soul of the Republican Party. I don't know whether it's a heart or an absence of a heart, maybe the dark, empty soul. But whatever it is, a true leader has emerged, someone who represents the best of Republican values. I'm talking, of course, about the fat, Oxycontin-addicted Rush Limbaugh, who made clear today that all Republicans must bow to him. Even the chairman of the Republican Party, Michael Steele, no sooner than 24 hours, less than 24 hours, after saying that some of Rush's comments are incendiary and ugly, that he's only an entertainer, came back, hat in hand, on his knees, begging forgiveness to Darth Rush, his overlord, telling him to please, please forgive him. That after Rush Limbaugh spent 20 minutes talking about how Michael Steele got off to a shaky start. Yes, Steele may be the technical head of the Republican Party, but we all know that Rush Limbaugh is its true head. Every single Republican now that has criticized Rush Limbaugh has gone back on hands and knees begging forgiveness. Of course, the first to do this was Congressman Phil Gingrey of Georgia. He, on January 27th, said, quote, "It's easy if you're Sean Hannity or Rush Limbaugh or even sometimes Newt Gingrich to stand back and throw bricks. You don't have to try to do what's best for your people and your party. You're just on these talk shows and you're living well. You like to stir up controversy, but that doesn't mean they would be good leaders." Now, this is non-controversial, just like Michael Steele telling Rush Limbaugh that some things he says are ugly and incendiary. That's non-controversial. In fact, Rush Limbaugh himself, and I have had the sad dishonor of hearing the fat addict speak at a radio convention where everyone except me gave him a standing ovation, and everyone except me bent down to kiss his ass. But I have heard him say that he's only an entertainer and that it's all, it's all done with a wink and a nod. It's all done to make people mad. Even Rush doesn't believe in what Rush claims to believe, at least so he says, behind closed doors. Well, Republicans know that, politicians know it, but as soon as they tell the truth, well, they're forced, within 24 hours forced, to make an apology. Now, Congressman Gingrey was practically on his hands and knees, begging forgiveness. Quote, "I regret and apologize for the fact that my comments have offended and upset my fellow conservatives. That was not my intent. Rush Limbaugh is a conservative giant, the voice of the conservative movement's conscience. Every day, millions and millions of Americans, myself included, turn on their radios and televisions to listen to what they have to say. We are inspired by their words, by his determination." And they say that they're Democrats. They consider Obama the Messiah. The irony is that I don't hear that much from Democrats. Frankly, we on the left are known as a contentious bunch, as was famously said by Will Rogers, who said, I am not a member of any organized party. I'm a Democrat. We constantly harp on our own, criticize our own, and that's okay. That's what thinking human beings do. We criticize our own, we come to conclusions, and we recognize that Obama, for all his failures, is far, far superior to George W. Bush, or frankly, any president in my lifetime, at least thus far. But Republicans are not good at criticizing each other because they recognize that Rush Limbaugh is their leader. They may not like him as their leader, they may grumble behind their back, but he is their leader. And there's one thing I want to make clear in tonight's show is how much he is their leader, how much he has rebuilt the Republican Party in his image, and why that has brought the Republican Party to ashes, where I hope they remain for a long time. Now, you know what? I take that back. Rush Limbaugh said, I hope Obama fails. I hope the Republican Party succeeds. I hope the Republican Party rejects Rush Limbaugh. If they reject Rush Limbaugh, if they reject the idea that the rich should become richer and the poor should serve the rich, if they actually come toward the center, I would welcome that Republican Party. I would love to have a Republican Party willing to work with the president to see where they could agree and where they could disagree. That's Obama's view. That's my view as well. But I do hope the Republican Party of Rush Limbaugh fails. Congressman Gingrey not only apologized on the 28th, but later that day apologized again directly to Darth Rush. I don't know whether Darth Rush was using the dark side of the Force to put the stranglehold on him, but it sure sounded like it, didn't it? Ask yourself if this doesn't sound like somebody who's in the stranglehold of Darth Vader. Congressman Gingrey said, and this is a direct quote, "Rush, thank you so much. I thank you for the opportunity. Of course, it's not exactly the way I wanted to come on, but I appreciate your giving me the opportunity. Mainly, I want to express to you and all your listeners my very sincere regret for those comments I made. I clearly ended up putting my foot in my mouth on some of those comments, and I just wanted to tell you, Rush, that I regret those stupid comments." What were the stupid comments? merely that Rush Limbaugh likes to stir up a bit of controversy and gin up the base, and it doesn't mean he'd necessarily be a good leader? That's what he's so base and abjectly apologetic for, when Rush Limbaugh himself admits he's just trying to stir up people, when Rush Limbaugh says he's not the leader of the Republican Party? Whatever Rush thinks, he is their leader. And I think that Democrats, and I got to say, I got to give President Obama credit for pushing Republicans and saying, are you with him or against him? Remember all the talk about Obama and Reverend Jeremiah Wright. And it was pushed, and you know what? I think it was fair. Yeah, it went over the top at times. But I think it was fair to ask Obama what are his views on his pastor, and he gave a very complex answer, as liberals are wont to do. And then his pastor went further, and Obama was forced to distance himself. Again, I think the right thing to do. Well, I think we have to ask Republicans the exact same thing about Rush Limbaugh. Are you for him, or are you against him? Rush Limbaugh, just last weekend, you probably know, gave an 85-minute speech before the Conservative Political Action Conference. We talk radio hosts are known to be long-winded. It's true. And Limbaugh, certainly the longest-winded. But the audience is more interesting than the buffoon on stage, because they did treat him like the Messiah. They treated him better, certainly, than the Germans treated Obama. It was all breathless, rush, 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 star-struck applause, wrote Kathleen Parker, the conservative columnist. Star-struck applause by a grateful audience. And Rush told the audience, says Kathleen Parker, that Obama, in essence, is Stalin. And, of course, everybody cheered. This is a direct quote by Rush Limbaugh in his 20-minute on-air attack on Michael Steele for saying the obvious point that Rush is often ugly. In fact, I think he used the word sometimes, that he's sometimes ugly or incendiary. Here is Limbaugh. Why do you claim you lead the Republican Party when you seem obsessed with seeing to it that President Obama succeeds? I, frankly, am stunned that the chairman of the Republican National Committee endorses such an agenda. I have to conclude that he does because he attacks me for wanting it to fail. For wanting it to fail. For wanting Obama to fail. And one of the fascinating things now is already Republicans are rewriting this history. We'll have Mike Lane on the show, and you'll hear the spin bite. I'm predicting this in advance. Well, I haven't talked to Mike about it. You will hear him say, Rush wasn't saying he wanted the country to fail. He wasn't saying he wanted Obama to fail. He was saying that, he wants his policies to fail, that he wants the country to succeed. Well, who's in charge of the country? You know, it's one thing to say, as I might have said on George Bush, I hope he succeeds, but I think he'll fail. That's a very different thing. It's a very, very different thing from saying, I hope he fails. What Rush is saying, it's very interesting how conservatives and liberals approach issues. I want you to think about this. Liberals say, what is best for the country? What is best for economic progress, for all Americans? Not just the rich, but including the rich, but also the middle class, the poor. What is the best for our environment so we can breathe clean air and drink clean water for the future? What is the best for our children? What is the best for us in the world? How can we help prevent future wars? What's the best for the country? Healthcare system. Then they look at the problems, as Obama has. President Obama has, he brings in people from all different views, puts them together, have them work on the problems, and come to find solutions. It takes more time. That's why Republicans are better at spin bites than we are. They can give their answer in a minute. We tend to want to get the correct answer, which means that if we're going to describe science, for example, it requires a lot of nuance. Try to describe the theory of evolution in 20 seconds. It's not easy to do. Say God created it, and you've done it all in three words. And that is how Republicans approach problems. They approach problems by assuming they're right and then finding the facts to support what they've already believed to be right. The Downing Street memo, of course, put it all very clearly and very bluntly. President Bush, Republican, conservative, fix the facts around the policy. You make the policy first, you find the facts second. Yeah, I happen to have talked once to the person who wrote the memo for Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, when he invaded Grenada. President Reagan invaded the small island of Grenada, and while invading, while our troops were on the island fighting there, gave his lawyers 48 hours to justify it, at which point they did their best to do so and came up with an obscure treaty that they said justified it. But that's exactly how Republicans work. Take action first, justify it later. As Richard Nixon once said, if the president does it, it's not against the law. Do it, find justification later. Indeed, my former law school roommate, classmate John Yoo, the person who wrote all those torture and awful memos, was the classic lawyer who, you know, the toady lawyer who justified what the president already decided he wanted done. In essence, really, I got to, and this may be the only time I've ever defended John Yoo, but in some sense I do have to defend him in the sense that I don't think he designed the policies. I think Cheney said, I want to torture, and he said to John Yoo, give me a memo to justify what I want to do. And frankly, if John Yoo hadn't given him that memo, he would have been fired. And then some toady lawyer would have. Now, that no more justifies John Yoo any more than it justifies a lower-down Nazi who pulls the switch that lets the gas into the chamber. But we should be clear that the person who's just following orders, while evil, is of a lesser evil than the person who gives the orders. I think that's fair. John Yoo, while evil, is less evil than the Cheney and the Rove and the others who told him what to do. And so Republicans are very much act first, justify later. And that's the basic distinction between them. And Rush Limbaugh is in many ways the id of the Republican Party, right? He says, I hope Obama fails. That's his first goal. His first goal is to destroy President Obama. His first goal is to destroy the Republican, the Democratic Party. And if it means bringing the country down with him, so be it. Rush Limbaugh has his priorities in order. Raise the power of Rush Limbaugh, number one. Raise the Republican Party, number two. Destroy the Democrats, number three. And the country be damned. Rush hopes that President Obama fails because he knows if President Obama succeeds, then he, like Franklin Delano Roosevelt, will lead a liberal America, and his ideas will lead a liberal America for decades to come. And Rush doesn't want that. Very, very different. Now, you're going to hear people arguing differently. Rush himself has portrayed this all kinds of different ways, saying that, no, I just hope his policies fail, which really is the same thing. Rush wants our country to be in a Great Depression, because then he can go, ha-ha. And like I said, he's the id of the Republican Party. He says what Republicans say in private, only he says so publicly. So I want to play for you the actual quote, and I'm sorry to do this to you, because I don't want any of you to have vomiting fits or retch attacks, and if you need to step away from the computer, I understand. But I want to play for you the full 4-minute clip. I may have to interrupt in the middle because, I don't know how long I can stand it. But of what Rush Limbaugh actually said. Because I think context is important. And all the Republicans that say we were taking him out of context, listen to the full context of what he had to say.
I got a request here from a major American print publication. Dear Rush, for the Obama Immaculate Inauguration, we are asking a handful of very prominent politicians, statesmen, scholars, businessmen, commentators, and economists to write 400 words on their hope for the Obama presidency. We would love to include you. If you could send us 400 words on your hope for the Obama presidency, we need it by Monday night, that would be ideal.
Did you notice he used the word immaculate? You know, these, if anyone doubts the mainstream media is conservative, ask why they are attacking Obama already to rush, you know, on President Obama's immaculate inauguration. Okay, so they want to say, what is your hope? They want to get different views. The conservative mainstream media is getting presumably some liberals, and they're asking Rush Limbaugh what is his hope. Here's how he responds.
Now, see, here we're caught in this trap again. The premise is, what is your hope for the... My hope, and please understand me when I say this, I disagree fervently with the people on our side of the aisle who have caved and who say, oh, I hope he succeeds. We've got to give him a chance. Why?
Got that? I disagree fervently with those that say, I hope he succeeds. We've got to give him a chance. You know, I know even Democrats, liberals, like me, who were astounded by the coup d'etat of the United States Supreme Court. I mean, here we had the United States Supreme Court illegally, unlawfully perform a coup d'etat and enforce upon us a president who lost an election. And yet I didn't hear people saying, I hope he fails. Indeed, with a president like Ronald Reagan or George Bush Sr., neither of whom I voted for, I did hope they would succeed. I don't think they did. But I hoped they would. Rush Limbaugh is different. Rush Limbaugh wants President Obama to fail, even if it means great danger to the entire American people. Even if it means great damage to our economy. He angrily disagrees with the people who want to give him, to give the president the benefit of the doubt, to give him a shot. And in doing so, he really represents the 20-some-odd percent of people that never stopped liking George Bush, or the 18% that like Dick Cheney. I know I've got a caller on the line. I'll get with you in just a second, Kevin. I do want to finish, though, playing this clip. I'll try not to interrupt too much. It is hard not to. Let's hear more.
They didn't give Bush a chance in 2000 before he was inaugurated. The search and destroy mission had begun. I'm not talking about search and destroy, but I've been listening to Barack Obama for a year and a half. I know what his politics are. I know what his plans are as he has stated them. I don't want them to succeed. If I wanted Obama to succeed, I'd be happy the Republicans have laid down. And I would be encouraging Republicans to lay down and support him. I don't want, look, what he's talking about is the absorption of as much of the private sector by the U.S. government as possible. From the banking business, to the mortgage industry, to the automobile business, to the healthcare. I do not want the government in charge of all of these things. I don't want this to work.
Because what happens if it works? What happens if it works? What happens if Americans are happy with their health care? I mean, we saw what happened with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, because remember, that's really the heart. That's really the enemy, the true enemy of Republicans. What happened with FDR? We brought Social Security. And now 80, 90% of Americans support Social Security? We have Medicare. And yeah, our health care is too expensive, and yeah, we can do better, and yeah, you know, if we were to get rid of the middleman, like in Canada, we could save more money. But most Americans like Medicare. They like Social Security. Rush Limbaugh is scared to death that if Medicare for all works, then Americans might just like it. Don't let them taste freedom. They might like it. Don't let them taste the good life. They might like it. Right? You don't want someone you're keeping down in chains to taste good food, and you don't want your dog to taste good food, right? If you feed your dog food, your dog's happy with dog food. But once your dog tastes steak, he or she's going to beg at the table all night. Don't let poor people have a chance. Don't let Americans have health care. They'll just clamor for it more. Rush Limbaugh is scared. He is scared that President Obama's policies will succeed. And that's why he doesn't want to even give them a chance to succeed. It's not like, you know, a liberal would say, well, you know, I don't believe in conservative policies, but if he tries them and they fail, we'll be able to use that as an example for the future. We'll try to stop them. And if they fail, well, that'll just be proof. Not Rush Limbaugh. He's saying, I don't want them to have a chance. And Republicans laying down, well, not a single Republican in the House of Representatives voted for this President Obama's stimulus package. So were they caving, or were they listening to Rush Limbaugh? Clearly, once the leader had spoken, they had no choice. On with the clip.
So I'm thinking of replying to the guys, okay, I'll send you a response, but I don't need 400 words. I need four. I hope he fails. Well, what are you laughing at? See, here's the point. Everybody thinks it's outrageous to say. I mean, look at even my stats. Oh, you can't do that. Why not? What? Why is it any different? What's new? What is unfair about my saying I hope liberalism fails? Liberalism is our problem. Liberalism is what's gotten us dangerously close to the precipice here. Why do I want more of it? I don't care what the drive-by story is. I would be honored if the drive-by media headlined me all day long, Limbaugh : I hope Obama fails.
I would be honored if the media said all along, Limbaugh : I hope Obama fails. So next time you hear some Republican apologist, including one I may invite on my show, say, well, no, Limbaugh was just saying that, you know, I hope that, you know, certain policies. No, he said, I hope Obama fails. Don't let them talk you out of it. You just heard the full clip. They'll say it was taken out of context. I just played for you the full context. You got it. Now let me go to the phones. Kevin from New York City has been holding on a long time. Kevin, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
What was a bit of history lesson here? What was Hitler's occupation before he became Chancellor of Germany?
He was a failed artist.
Nope.
Well, he was a failed artist. He may have.
He was a failed artist, but in between.
I know he's in jail, and he tried a putsch, which is like a coup. He was in the military. I know that. You may have another one that I don't know. Tell me, Kevin.
Radio talk show host.
Really?
Yep.
I did not know that. You know, it's interesting because in the United States at that time, in the 1930s, the most rabid anti-Semitism was pushed forward by a radio talk show host called Father Coughlin, who had really ripped up people into mass hate. A lot of people don't realize that during World War II, it wasn't until after the death camps were disclosed, during World War II, all four of the 5 years of World War II, Americans thought Jews were a bigger threat to the United States than either Germany or Japan. And that's largely because of people like Father Coughlin and people like you know, Pat Buchanan's father or Lindbergh and so forth. No, the radio is a very powerful way to push hate. Very powerful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
In fact, one of the reasons I'm in radio was to counteract the likes of the Oxycontin-riddled fat man.
Well, why do you think I call every day to support?
And I'm glad you do support us. And I hope you support us on Radio Network.
People need to be aware. And to me, it's uncanny that he was wearing black too, and his hair was slicked back. He looked like a fat European.
He's Darth Vader. He just needs the mask.
He looks like Hitler's second in command, who's in charge of the Luftwaffe.
Oh, I was thinking just
fly a plane,
a propaganda man.
Luftwaffe.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of them gurring him. I think the propaganda minister was Joseph Goebbels. The interesting thing, I mean, Rush Limbaugh is actually a fascinating case study. I mean, he reminds me a lot of Joe McCarthy. In fact, I know a lot more about Joe McCarthy than I do about, I guess, Rush Limbaugh or Adolf Hitler, because I did an extensive year-long project in my high school on him. So I know a lot about Joe McCarthy. But Joe McCarthy, most people don't realize, when he was deciding to run for re-election, he was a junior senator from Wisconsin. The idea of communism in government was not even in his mind. He was going to do it on widening the St. Lawrence Seaway to allow more ships, you know, which is good for Wisconsin, which borders the Great Lakes. And that's what he was going to run for re-election on. And one of his staff said, almost as a joke, why don't you do it on communists in government? And everybody had a good laugh, and they were a little drunk at the time. And McCarthy started doing a riff on it. Yeah, yeah, like all these communists in government. And then, of course, he actually on a small plane in West Virginia came out with literally a laundry list. We now know it was a laundry list. It said, you know, two pants, one shirt. It was a laundry list. And he said, I have a list here of the communists in the U.S. government. And it took off from there. Here's a man who didn't believe his own lies at the beginning. But after being treated as a hero, year after year after year, after he was praised, after he became the leader of the right-wing movement, based on his claim of communist in government, which he never proved, never found a single one. And, you know, then came the House Committee on American Activities and the blacklist of Hollywood, and he became such a leader that by 3, 4, 5 years into it, he believed every word. What began as a joke became his life's work. And I think, frankly, Rush Limbaugh is exactly the same way. I think he began as a joke. You know, he was a DJ. This is a guy who never went to
college. Well, he was a welfare recipient.
Well, exactly. So welfare recipient. He never went to college, never had an education. He was a DJ. This is before talk radio existed. He was a DJ. He changed the records and said, next up, you know, is Elvis Presley, blah, blah. That's what he was. And, you know, once he just started talking a bit more and more and more, and you know, he did well as an entertainer. But now he is truly the head of the Republican Party. When Michael Steele has to bow down and scrape before him, the things that Michael Steele said, I'm going to play some of them for you. But, you know, basically, oh, I don't know. I have no idea what I was saying. And how could I have said such a thing? And, of course, you're wonderful. And this is the head of the Republican Party. There can be no doubt that the real leader is Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, yeah. You know, nobody. And the thing is, again, well, you see, Michael Steele is such a soulless, like most black Republicans are. You know, because any time you side along an entity that's 99% against the interests of 99% of your people who look like you or who could be related to you, then something is wrong with you to begin with.
So you know, I happen to know a decent number of black Republicans because I live in the only area of the country where they exist, which is Washington, D.C. I think
and it's all a hustle. It's the biggest hustle going on.
Exactly. And they're paid a high amount of money. I mean, we know what happened with Armstrong Williams, where he was paid $250,000 just to endorse No Child Left Behind.
Yeah.
If you are a black Republican, I mean, you know, all five of them in the country were at the Republican National Convention because they wanted to show their faces on camera.
If you're a black Republican and you're broke, you must be a total idiot.
Well, you wouldn't be broke because you'd find your way in and they would pay you a lot of money because you could be their token. Michael Steele was hilarious. He was talking on, I forget what show, about how Republicans need to use hip-hop to, you know, push their message. As if it were the media and not the message. As if Republicans could use hip-hop and convince, you know, alienated, unemployed black youth that really they need capital gains tax cuts. You know, if they just did it in hip-hop, they'd get it, right? They, you know, just change the word bitches and hoes to capital gains tax cuts tax cuts for the rich.
He is capitalizing off of the ignorance of a lot of bigoted, wealthy, you know, white people who don't know and don't really want to know, so he'll feed them anything.
Well, you know, they're trying everything, right? I mean, I think that's part of the reason, frankly, why they're pushing Bobby Jindal. Who actually is educated? I got to give him that. Unlike, you know,
he's educated, but he's desperate.
Well, he is, and I mean, but even Bobby Jindal has the same exact mantra as a Rush Limbaugh. It is, the government will always fail you, therefore don't trust the government. In other words, when conservatives are in charge, they screwed up in Katrina, therefore you can never trust the government, therefore you want to put we new conservatives in charge, those of us who want to dismantle the government, even though whenever we come to power, then we want big government. It's a weird kind of I mean, it requires Americans to forget, first of all, that there have been hurricanes before Katrina, where Bill Clinton and FEMA Director James Lee Witt did a tremendous job. Hurricane Andrew, Hurricane Hugo. There's a long list where a lot, so it requires people to forget that. It requires people to make this very strange leap of faith. It was as if Bobby Jindal had hoped that the government would fail in Katrina. It was as if Republicans all across the nation wanted the government to fail in Katrina, because even if 1,000 people died, and people need to remember that number because not enough people talk about it, 1,000 Americans died. They talk about the 3,000 Americans dead on September 11th, and that was caused by a foreign terrorist group. Well, 1,000 Americans are dead due to our own government incompetence, and that's got nothing to do with terrorism. 1,000 Americans died. Billions of dollars lost in property and homes and treasures that people had for all these years. And I honestly think most Republicans, like Rush Limbaugh, wanted the government to fail so they could make Governor Jindal's argument. And I should call him Piyush Jindal because I understand. I got to remember to do that. But Piyush Jindal wants the government to fail, because then he can make the argument, Grover Norquist's argument, that you want to make the government so small that you can drown it in a bathtub.
Yeah.
And it's this weird argument they're making. They want President Obama to fail, because if he succeeds, it will show America that government can do good, and God knows we can't do that. That will cause Americans to be hooked on things like Social Security and Medicare and all these other very successful programs.
They need a permanent underclass.
Exactly right.
That's the only way despotism works.
Well, look, I mean, was it Jesus who said the poor will always be with us? I don't doubt there will always be some that are poor.
But
it seems the Republicans want more.
Scale.
They want more, exactly. They want more that are poor. They want to redistribute wealth, as has happened in the last 8 years, from the poor to the wealthy.
Well, it's 530 since Reagan.
What's that?
It's not just 8 years, it's 30 years since Reagan.
Well, but it's really, you can subdivide, you're right, Kevin, but you can subdivide it. If you look at the Clinton years, for example, you will see that, yes, the rich got richer, but the middle class got richer, and the poor got richer under Bill Clinton. If you look at the median, even the 20% level, it went up under Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I have to disagree with you because Clinton just went along and he did what he could. Okay, but if you look at the core, and I'm talking true heart, no real wealth has been created in this country in 30 years. And I'm going back to my Adam Smith logic of wealth. Okay, the dot-com boom is what generated a lot of prosperity, but there was no real wealth, tangible wealth created under the dot-com boom. And take it from somebody who works with computers. Because most of the
I don't know about that. I mean, we have American computers and technology sold all around the world.
But it's being worked by people who are not American, for the most part. A lot of it.
Well, right. But look, Microsoft, and I'm the first to criticize Microsoft and Apple. Yeah. I mean, these are American companies.
They're American company. They're rank and file. The people who. Put it this way, if you have to call Microsoft or Apple, what is the likelihood of you having an American on the other side of that phone?
Very unlikely, but that's outsourcing. That's
yeah, exactly, and that's...
It's a bit different. I just think that if you look at the economy, and I agree with you, it's been a problem for 30 years, but you will see that in the Clinton administration, you will find that not just the rich, but the middle class, the lower middle class, and even the poor...
Everybody prospered, yes.
That's right.
Great.
But that wasn't true under Reagan or Bush Sr. And the worst case, of course, was Bush Jr.
Yeah, and I agree with you 100%. But I think it just came to a head under Bush Jr.
Well, I think it all fell apart. At that point, we were cutting taxes for the rich, spending massive amounts of money on wars and losing billions of dollars, and the waste was incredible. And then we were cutting regulation at the same time, so that people, bankers and Wall Street execs could just line their pockets with gold and run away. And at the same time, we were rewarding companies that took their businesses off seas. I mean, at some point, you can only do that for so long, and even a country and an economy as great as ours is going to fall apart. But what's fascinating to me is that the Republican leader, Rush Limbaugh, I have as early as November 6th, the election was November 4th, 2 days after the election, Limbaugh was already calling this the Obama recession. So they make the mistakes, and then they're determined to blame it on the new president.
Yeah. Well, you see, again, you have to ignore Rush Limbaugh, okay? And when I mean ignore, I mean not totally ignore him.
I don't want to ignore
Russell, him. Huh?
I'll tell you why I don't want to ignore him. To me, I think the more we show, and I think people are starting to see this, the Democratic Party, President Obama's not ignoring him, and neither is his press spokesman, because I think once people see that this clown, and he is a clown, that this, you know, ignorant clown is running the Republican Party, they can see that that's the alternative. And I think it actually leads to more strength to President Obama. I want to ask every Republican.
Well, yeah, I'll give you that.
Whose side do you want?
I don't want to completely ignore him.
I think Media Matters, for example, does a tremendous job in exposing him for what he is.
Yeah, but who really concerns me more is the Joe Scarboroughs.
Well, okay. Well, that's because Joe Scarborough can sound reasonable, and Rush never
can. Yeah, and he sounds intellectual. But he's not that far over from Rush.
No, right? They aren't. The only difference is Rush takes the patina off. He takes the coating off. He's the id of the Republican Party. And that's why they can't reject him. That's why the congressmen, Gingrey and Michael Steele, have to go and bow to him and apologize and kiss his ring. They have to because they know that really they're the same. That they if they denounce Rush Limbaugh, they'd be denouncing themselves. They just want to cover him up. They want to make everything seem so nice. But he is saying what they really believe.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, Kevin. I want to play some more clips if I can. But I do appreciate your call, Kevin. And if others want to call in, you know the number, 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I want to play this clip because it's bigger than Limbaugh, obviously. This is a clip on MSNBC where you have the host repeating exactly what Michael Steele said. And she's repeating it to Pat Buchanan. Now, Pat Buchanan is a great example of a Rush Limbaugh who has coated over the edges. I mean, Pat Buchanan's a nasty person. When I was a Nazi hunter, Pat Buchanan defended every single Nazi war criminal that I worked hard to deport. Pat Buchanan is the closest thing we have to fascism in America in terms of what he supports. He comes from that tradition, that Father Coughlin, that tradition. But I got to tell you, on TV, he's a nice guy. He is a nice guy. Pat Buchanan honestly admitted that the voters in Florida didn't vote for him. His rock heart, his ideology is horrific, but he can put a very kind note on it. He can sit and laugh with, you know, Rachel Maddow. So listen when the host pushes Pat Buchanan on Michael Steele's apology and how even Pat Buchanan, who wants to sound reasonable, who wants to sound normal, who wants to sound like someone who could have mainstream American views, how even he is forced to defend Rush Limbaugh.
Why, Pat? Why would Michael Steele say on Saturday night, look, I'm the de facto leader of the Republican Party, and then he goes on, runs back after Rush kind of went after him on his radio show, and Steele says, my intent was not to go after Rush. I have enormous respect for Rush Limbaugh. I was maybe a little bit inarticulate. There was no attempt on my part to diminish his voice or his leadership. What is it with Rush and these conservatives who go running back to him to kowtow?
Well, again, Michael Steele made a mistake. It wasn't that Rush is an entertainer, which he certainly is, as well as a conservative voice. But Michael Steele said that what he says is ugly and incendiary, which is a real insult. And having made that insult to someone who has an enormous voice, 20 million people or something, I think he was right to apologize. I regret Michael Steele did that. I think he's a good man. But this is a tiff, and I give the Democrats...
You got that? He doesn't regret that Michael Steele apologized. He regrets that Michael Steele said that Rush Limbaugh was ugly and incendiary. He regrets that Steele said that Limbaugh was ugly and incendiary. Because Limbaugh's got 20 million listeners. And, you know, if you have that kind of power, well, I guess it justifies anything you do. Well, you know, Pat, hundreds of millions voted for Obama. Well, so is Rush Limbaugh ugly and incendiary? Well, let's hear from the man himself.
They wanted him elected because they wanted to reassert their power, the media here, in being able to sway public opinion to the result that they wanted. So it didn't. They were going to cover up the Jeremiah Wright, all these things that give indication of radicalism in Obama, cover that up, portray him as he wants to be portrayed, somebody who's not to be questioned, somebody who's not to be doubted. We're just supposed to accept and trust.
Somebody who's not to be questioned? Someone who's not to be doubted? Someone to accept and trust? Is that President Obama? Who went three times to the Republican caucus meeting of the House, even though he got no votes for his stimulus package? Not to be questioned? Not to be doubted? The man who invites people in his cabinet, you know, the campaign of rivals, cabinet of rivals that Abraham Lincoln set up? I don't know what dream world Rush Limbaugh is living in. But let's go on and listen to whether anything he says might be considered ugly or incendiary.
Because most of these guys came alive and came of age in the civil rights battles of the 60s. It defines who they are. They've trained the young drive-bys to look at events through the same prism. You know, racism in this country is an exclusive province of the left. We're witnessing racism all this week that led up to the inauguration. We are being told that we have to hope he succeeds, that we have to bend over, grab the ankles, bend over forward, backward, whichever, because his father was black, because this is the first black president. We've got to accept this.
Did you hear that? We're being told that we have to hope he succeeds, that we have to bend over, grab the ankles. Thank you for the graphic design of someone being raped. Because his father was black. Really? Really? Is that what the media is saying? Take your strongest Obama defender, David Plouffe, David Axelrod. They're telling America you have to accept every word he says on faith because he's black? I don't recall people saying that. I don't recall Jesse Jackson saying that. He certainly gave him a hard time. I don't recall Al Sharpton saying that. Who's saying that, Rush? Who's saying that? Who are they in the chat room? They're laughing at the idea that they covered up Reverend Wright. I don't remember anyone covering up Reverend Wright. As I recall, virtually everyone mentioned it at every point that they could. So clearly this is the voice of a paranoid, insecure, addiction-riddled madman. Well, madman's a dangerous word. Let's not assume he's insane. Let's assume he's just trying to be an incendiary entertainer. But you see, the fascinating thing is not that Rush Limbaugh exists. There's always going to be bloviating people saying extreme things on the air. Or just bloviating people saying extreme things. What's fascinating is not Limbaugh's existence. I wouldn't do a story on him if it were just him bloviating. What's fascinating is the apologies. The way the Republicans recognize him as their overlord. From members of Congress to Michael Steele, the head of the Republican Party, to Pat Buchanan, who ran for president and is a voice in the conservative movement. They've all got to pay their dues. They've got to pay their dues to Rush Limbaugh. Why? Well, to help explain, I'm going to play another right-wing clip. I'll probably play more right-wing clips this hour than you'll ever hear from me again. Because what's fascinating about this is that the right admits it to be true. As much as there's a few half-hearted denials. Oh, no, Rush Limbaugh isn't really our leader. As soon as someone says, what? Rush Limbaugh's not your leader? Immediately they go and they bow and they scrape and they kiss his ring and they kiss his ass. Interestingly, the Republicans know he is their leader. They know it. And they admit it when they're talking amongst themselves. This is a clip on, yes, The Factor. Bill O'Reilly on Fox News talking with a reporter from the Washington Times. And if you don't know what the Washington Times is, you should. In Washington, D.C., there is a very large, credible newspaper called the Washington Post. It's been around for a very long time. And then there's a newspaper that loses millions of dollars a year, funded entirely by a man who has declared himself to be the Messiah, Reverend Sun Myung Moon. Yes, the founder of the cult that led to the Moonies, that led to young people being taken off the street and denied protein and forced into mass marriages with strange sexual practices. I won't give all those details. I've done them on another show. But this crazy billionaire, cult-leading, messianic complex guy, Reverend Sun Myung Moon, who claims he talks to Jesus and Hitler daily, must be interesting conversations, bought the Washington Times so he could have influence in Washington. And even though nobody buys it and nobody reads it, well, he funnels millions of dollars into it so it stays afloat. And he has a whole host of conservative reporters who write on his newspaper to try to give it the patina of influence, the patina of acceptability. Patina is a great word. I've used a lot today. Patina, of course, is a covering, usually a false covering, a shiny covering for something that's rotten underneath. So here is a conversation between Bill O'Reilly and a reporter for the Washington Times. And the fascinating thing about this conversation is how much they admit that Rush Limbaugh is their true leader. Listen in.
So, look, I don't know which party is more chaotic at this point. You got a radio talk show host, powerful guy, Rush Limbaugh, calling a lot of shots in the Republican Party, it seems. And the Steele obviously didn't like it or doesn't like it, doesn't want to get in a fight with Rush Limbaugh. That would be suicide for him. So what do you think?
Well, I think that Steele is the head of the Republican Party and Rush Limbaugh is the head of the conservative cause in this country. I think Steele made a mistake by throwing Rush under the bus. Rush came back and unloaded all over Steele and showed that Steele was probably punching above his weight class. Steele then apologized, and both of them are trying to put it behind him. But what's interesting about this dispute, Bill, is...
Before he says what's interesting, note that he says that Steele tried to punch above his weight class. The head of the Republican Party was punching above his weight class. He didn't even belong in the ring with the real leader of the Republican Party. I mean, think about this. While George Bush was in office, we had a leader of our Democratic Party. His name was Howard Dean. Is there anyone, any Democrat, any entertainer, that if Howard Dean attacked, they would say, well, it's not in his weight class? Let's take, I don't know, Oprah. Perhaps the most powerful entertainer in America. Even Oprah, I can't imagine someone saying, well, Howard Dean, you know, he shouldn't have attacked Oprah. She's not in his weight class. And that's Oprah, who isn't really a political figure that often. But when the head of the Republican Party can't even be in the same ring as Rush Limbaugh, you know who's king and you know who's duke. You know who outranks who. You know who is the overlord and who is the vassal. You know who runs the Republican Party. Listen to more of this discussion.
That when Steele talked about Rush Limbaugh, he talked about ugly, he talked about incendiary, he talked about he's an entertainer. All of those criticisms were about style or tone, not about substance. In other words, Steele and Rush don't represent some sort of fundamentally different and disagreeing factions within the right, you know, on issues like, you know, gun control or taxes or abortion or, you know, the march towards socialism. They're basically on the same side on 80 to 90% of the issue.
They're basically on the same side. This is no liberal claim. The right admits it. The right wing admits it. Limbaugh is their leader. If there's one thing that the right and the left can agree on, and there's not much, it's that Rush Limbaugh is the leader of the Republican Party. Listen to Bill O'Reilly confirm the same thing.
The question it gives people who don't follow politics closely and really don't know what's going on is that Michael Steele obviously is apologizing to Rush Limbaugh, that Rush Limbaugh is more powerful than Steele, and Limbaugh may well be. He may well be.
He may well be. We'll move on.
He probably is. I mean, you know, RNC chairmen come and go. Rush Limbaugh is a constant in the American conservative movement.
The question becomes, who's running the Republican Party? Who's the most powerful person within the Republican Party? Who's shaping how the party behaves?
Well, I would say, you know, again, you're getting into semantics here. I mean, again, I think Rush is the head of the conservative cause. He happens to be a Republican, so I would say that he's the most influential Republican. Michael Steele's the head of the Republican Party.
But,
you know,
then you say, is it wise for a Republican Party to have a radio talk show host as the most powerful person in it? Is that a good thing?
I think it is a good thing. I mean, I don't think it's a bad thing to have Rush Limbaugh articulating. I mean, Rush Limbaugh is way more than an entertainer. He is a fearless, unapologetic advocate of conservatism. And he's not constrained by politicians basically can't say certain things. Rush can just let it fly.
If Rush Limbaugh ran for president next time, would he win?
I don't think so. I don't, again, he's not a politician. He is a spokesman. He's the leader of a movement and of a cause.
Here's what I'm getting at. If Rush Limbaugh ran for president and he didn't win, okay, couldn't get the plurality of the nation behind him for whatever reason, but he is now the signature voice of the Republican Party. It seems to me the Republican Party's got some problems. It looks leaderless. It looks rudderless. That's what it looks like. Am I wrong?
No, I think you're right. I think right now the Republican Party is casting about for its next generation of leaders. They got their clocks cleaned in 2006 and in 2008.
Right, so there is a couple of people in the party.
You got it. I mean, this is fascinating stuff here. You have Bill O'Reilly and the Mooney newspaper guy, and they agree that the Republican Party has no other leader but Rush Limbaugh, right? There is no God but Limbaugh, or there's no God but money, and Limbaugh is his prophet. They admit it. And yet, they're afraid to disown him, because they know that if they do, they're going to have to be like going to the mafia godfather, right? They're going to have to be on bended knee, and they're going to have to apologize to this guy. I mean, even Bobby Jindal, Piyush Jindal, Piyush, quote, Bobby, unquote, Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, who doesn't want to use his Indian name because he fears that Republicans won't elect anyone who uses his real ethnic name, even he bows down to Rush Limbaugh, right? This is a direct quote from Jindal on the Larry King show. He plays a clip from Rush Limbaugh, and Jindal says, and this is likely the next candidate for president for the Republicans, he says, look, clearly the American people are worried about paying their mortgages, keeping their jobs, and paying their health care bills. I think Rush is a great leader for conservatives. I think he articulates what a lot of people are concerned about. Let's just put aside the fact that Rush Limbaugh doesn't want to do anything about helping people pay their mortgages or keep their jobs or pay their health care bills. He's against all that. I guess Governor Jindal's a little bit confused on it. So Larry King asked Governor Jindal, do you want Obama to fail? And Jindal responds, I don't want those policies to be adopted. I want my country to succeed, but I don't want those policies to be adopted. And King says, and Larry King is not normally a strong interviewer, he says, what if the policies work? And Jindal says, well, again. And King says, what if they work? And Jindal says, this is where we have a fundamental disagreement. I don't think it's going to work. He also goes on then to ask whether Jindal was happy that Steele apologized. And Jindal said, I'm glad he apologized. I think the chairman's a breath of fresh air, and Rush is a leader for conservatives. He articulates blah, 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 blah. So everyone's bowing down to him. Everyone's bowing down to Rush. You have the leader of the Republican Party. You have the putative nominee for president of the United States. All of them are bowing down to a guy who represents the id